Grizzly One.
Two young people decided to form their own organization called the Guardian Angels. You see them with red berets. When you see them, you get a nice, secure feeling in your heart.
I admire Curtis Sliwa, and I think that he takes his life into his own hands doing what he does.
Curtis Sliwa, the Guardian Angels founder and leader.
We've got Curtis Sliwa from WABC Radio.
Curtis Sliwa, legendary New York.
The Drive at 5 with Curtis Sliwa. What happened today? Why? And what's next? Live, local, on it. 77 WABC.
You can't start a fire without a spark.
7 minutes after the hour of 5, it is your Drive on the 5, taking you home, and many of you coming out of the suites where maybe you disconnected from Imus in the morning because you had to work your 9 to 5. You're back in your cars listening to your terrestrial radios, or you're still at work. You're listening to the streaming audio or on your app. There's a WABC radio app. You ought to download. So many different ways to get this program. And, yeah, if you missed it on the drive at 5, you can get it on a podcast. But there's heavy rain out there. As you heard, Bill Evans, weather forecaster from Channel 7 Eyewitness News. So take it easy. You'll get to where you got to go, your place of business or your home or your local gin mill. But I have a very special guest here today, my oldest son, little Anthony Chester Sliwa. And it's important because oftentimes when he goes visiting the home state of his mother, Mary, which is New Jersey, in the bucolic town of Oradell, right next to Ridgewood, you know, by the duck pond. Yeah, I know that town, too. I had an ex-wife from that town, too. He oftentimes comments to me, "Hey, Daddy, what's up with the roads? It's like it's falling apart." So I would have thought for sure today that Shamu El Jefe, Chris Christie, being forced to give his budgetary address in Trenton, because, as you know, he would have much preferred to be in South Carolina, would have talked about this at some point. But first, he gave salutations and greetings to the folks who haven't seen him in a month of Sundays, both bodies of the state legislature.
I want to say thank you to the people of New Jersey for allowing me the great privilege of running for President of the United States. It was the governing experience I've had here in this great state, the reforms we tackled here in New Jersey, the bipartisan hard choices we made, and the recovery from one of the largest natural disasters in our nation's history that I felt prepared me for higher office.
Yeah.
While the result was not what I had hoped for, and maybe some of you too, the experience has made me a better governor, it's made me a better American, and it's made me a better person.
Oh, really? I was more interested in, hey, are you going to raise the gas tax to pay for all those capital improvements to the roadways and the infrastructure?
Some people in this room want to address the next generation of funding for the Transportation Trust Fund solely on the back of taxpayers by imposing a hike on the gas tax without any discussion of tax fairness. Never mind that we're already one of the most heavily taxed states in the country, and that excessive taxes are driving people and businesses to other states.
Look, I'm not talking about the circles, traffic circles. I'm not talking about the dreaded jug heads, whatever they call that stuff in New Jersey. I'm talking about the potholes, the sump holes. What are you going to do to fix those?
The reality is that New Jersey is fully able to support the current capital program as originally proposed in the current five-year authorization. And if you listen to some of the reports on this, you would think that we're not doing anything right now. We're spending the same $3.2 billion this year that we spent last year, that we spent the year before that, and the year before that. $3.2 billion a year on our roads. But you listen to some of you in this chamber and some of the folks in the media, you would think that all spending on infrastructure has stopped, that the state is collapsing. It's ridiculous.
This guy is dense. Anyway, on the line to give us analysis of his state budgetary address in Trenton earlier today, the governor gave Tom Moran, editorial page editor and columnist for the Star Ledger. Tom, am I one of the many to blame? Because every time I visit New Jersey with my son, the state of his mother, we fall into potholes, sump holes, sometimes get swept up in an asphalt bath.
You know, it amazes me that he took that line because people drive and take the overcrowded buses and overcrowded trains with the terrible schedules because they're all underfunded. They hit the potholes. How is he expecting people to believe that everything is fine on transportation? It's kind of otherworldly.
You know, I was amazed to see that in recent polling of not only those who use their vehicles, but also those who use mass transit, they were all for raising the gas tax, since the average price at the pump is about $1.50 a gallon at this point.
Well, I don't know that. I don't know what poll you're looking at, Curtis, but most polls show people don't want to raise the gas tax because they don't trust the government to use it to fix the roads. So now this year there's a constitutional amendment on the ballot that says we promise if we raise the gas tax, it'll all be used on transit.
Oh, so AAA's poll is skewed, right?
Well, the polls show that people realize that we have major work to do, but most of them also show we don't want to pay for it. So, you know, voters are just as crazy as the governor in that way. You know, they want their cake without having to.
Now, I was reading in the perspective section of the Sunday Newark Star Ledger, and you had a huge piece. Christie's comeback starts Tuesday with pensions. What did he have to say about following through on the state contribution to the pension fund?
Well, he did make a substantial payment in this budget. He wants to make a substantial payment into the pension fund. But that's a scaled back payment. It's 4/10 of what due. So just under half of what's really due. The actuaries say this is what you should be putting in. You know, it's $1 billion. He's putting in $400 million. That kind of thing. So it's a success and it's progress in a sense, but it's still way shy of where we need to be.
Well,
what he didn't do is propose any larger reform either of the pension and health system or of the transportation. So on the two big issues facing the state right now, pretty much punted.
All right, but Tom Moran, for those outside of New Jersey, those here in New York, Connecticut, Pennsylvania, other states listening, they're not permitted to juggle around with a pension fund the way Jersey is. I know it didn't start with Chris Christie. In fact, I believe it started with Christine Todd Whitman, and then I think Jim McGreevy carried on. How were they able to get away with not making contributions to the ongoing pension fund?
Yeah, because there is no requirement, and all these guys know by the time this bomb explodes, I'll be out of office. And you're right, though. It goes back mainly to Whitman, and it's been bipartisan in New Jersey, this tradition of just terrible government where you avoid your obligations. I mean, in Christie's defense, he's been a little better than previous governors, but he's still way shy of where he should be. And of course, he famously broke his promise when they finally did have a deal on the pensions to fix it once and for all in 2011. The deal was workers take smaller benefits and the government starts putting in what it ought to put in.
Now,
workers took the smaller benefits, they took the cuts, and Christie didn't put in his share. So, you know, politically, he's poisoned the waters more than other governors. But if you look at the dollars, he's put in more into the pension fund than the previous governors.
Now, I noticed in the county section of your paper, the Newark Star Ledger Sunday, they had a very detailed piece on New Jersey taxes that keep on climbing. The average property tax bill jumped 2.4% from 2014 to 2015, and some rose much more. Did he at all address that? Because it's the number one issue that people tell me as to why suddenly they're voting in South Carolina on Saturday in a Republican primary, and they're not back in their home state, the Garden State, New Jersey.
Yeah, he addressed it, but he didn't propose any solution to it. He talked about it as if he solved it because the rate of increase has dropped. What he didn't say is that he's also dramatically cut by billions of dollars every year the rebates that used to be given out to help people pay those bills. So if you look at the actual burden, you put in both the lower rate increase and the lack of rebates. If you look at the burden, it's grown faster under Christie even than it did under Corzine.
Now you mentioned
there's nothing in here, Curtis, to fix that.
Now you mentioned the burden. Every time I hear about Jersey's debt rating, it sounds like the way my minus net status is, where I can't even apply for layaway on a used a piece of furniture. How could the debt rating have plunged, been downgraded 9 times during his administration?
Well, it's mostly, and, you know, I'm not a big fan of the guy, but most of the problem is stuff he inherited because it's been bad government for 20 years. I mean, he has failed to fix it, but he didn't create this mess. He inherited it.
So what's your sense, Tom Moran, since you listened to him today? Is he prepared to make deals as he's made with Sweeney and the Democratic-controlled Assembly? Is he going to stand his ground even though he's not running in the national presidential campaign any longer? Or the possibility he may just resign and leave it to the lieutenant governor the rest of the way?
No, I think he's going to make deals. It was interesting because the speech was very fiery. He attacked Democrats unfairly over and over. They were furious after. The assembly speaker said, I'm hotter than a baked potato. You know, the Senate president said, you know, I guess you don't have to tell the truth in these speeches. And these are guys he's made deals with in the past. They're furious at him. But they also said they had a meeting this morning in private with him, and he was very conciliatory and charming. So, you know, my guess is what Christie's doing here is trying to whip up the public to be on his side in a big fight just to get better bargaining position. And if you look at the content of the budget, Curtis, it's not that bad. It leaves open plenty of room for bipartisan deals, and my guess is that's where he's headed.
And then finally, since I have my oldest son here, little Anthony Chester Sliwa, who visits his mom's hometown of Oradell, the bucolic little cul-de-sac where she grew up, and I take him nearby to the duck pond, sometimes in Ridgewood, which gives me more headaches about a former ex of mine. When can I tell him that we're now all of a sudden going to have alignment problems and undercarriage problems because of all the freaking potholes on the way there through Bergen County?
Yeah, the Chamber of Commerce did a study, or they sponsored a study, and found something like people. The average person spends $600 a year because of all the potholes here. And don't even get me started on the buses and rails. That's part of it, too. There is still no solution. What seems to be taking shape is a deal where, okay, they'll increase the gas tax and do pick up the pace of repairs, but they'll attach it to a cut in the estate tax, which touches only the richest 4% of New Jerseyans. That's what Christie's price of admission is to that deal. So I don't know, but that's the deal they had talked about in the past, and that's what they're all both sides are talking about today.
Well, catch Tom Moran in the Newark Star-Ledger. Great analysis of the return of Shamu El Jefe Chris Christie.
Curtis Sliwa, the Drive at 5.
We're very honored to have him here today.
77 WABC.
Degenerate hip-hop monster straight out of Compton. Look, Kendrick Lamar. What was that song? What did you say? Bitch, don't kill my vibe? He won the Rap Album of the Year award at the Grammys. And he got a shout-out from the White House. Now, let me see the White House. The women outnumber the men in the White House. Like in Bush 43's White House, you know, he had Laura, his two daughters, and one male. Well, with Obama, he's got Michelle and his two daughters. I think it's Sasha and Malia. So it's three against one. And so here's a guy whose one of his claims to fame is, bitch, don't kill my vibe. And he gets a shout out from the White House for winning the Degenerate Rap Hip Hop Award of the Year for an album at the Grammys. The White House says, shout out to Kendrick Lamar and working to build a bright future. Really? A bright future. I saw that performance on the stage. Yeah, he was in chains and shackles, acting like, you know, he was doing 20 years to life. Actually up in Folsom, the oldest prison in California, where you do hard time. And he said it's an anthem for the Black Lives Matter movement. And he was getting shout-outs galore. And then he was rocking a pendant. I don't know if you noticed up there in the middle of the Grammys, they had this huge, iconic map of Africa with Compton, his hometown, emblazoned right in the middle. And I'm saying to myself, whether it's Lamar, Kendrick, or any of those other degenerate hip-hop monsters, or let's take, for example, Snoop Dogg, who he gave a shout-out to, or Nas, you think they can even name any countries on the continent of Africa? Because, you see, they're African-Americans. If you go to the OAs, original Africans, many of them listening to us right now, in fact, because they drive yellow cabs, they drive those green lime cabs, they drive Uber cars now, they drive the black cars, they drive livery cars, and sometimes gypsy cars, and they learn the language, and I have conversations with them all times, and I say, yo, OA, they're from Nigeria, original Africans. And they're always saying, African Americans, they always make fun of us because we're recent immigrants from Africa. And they can't even name a country on the continent of Africa. But worse yet than Lamar getting a shout out, Kendrick Lamar getting a shout out from the White House, even though he's best known for Bitch Don't Kill My Vibe, he gave a shout out to Snoop Dogg. Snoop Dogg, who was featured in a Burger King commercial. And this is where I got to cut through all the street technology and the gangbangers who utilize now commercial properties to get across their messages. You may have remembered that Snoop Dogg, who has performed Gin and Juice for the president and his family. Yeah. Did a drive-by shooting. He killed another gangbanger. And he got away with it when all of a sudden the jury said, that was Snoop? Oh, can't be. Couldn't have been. Even though all the documentary evidence pointed to Snoop Doggy Dogg pulling the trigger in a drive-by shooting. And this is not before he hooked up with Dre in Long Beach and you know the rest of that story. This is when he was a hardcore gangbanging Crip wearing all blue. After he became famous, he didn't just give it up. You know, he said, I keep it real, so I got to do a drive-by shooting. He hit his target, he killed the guy, and he beat the rap. So now he's doing commercials for Burger King. Let me hear a few of those lines, please. Let me hear a few of those lines.
What up, though? You know me, Snoop D-O-double-G, live and direct from the BK.
From the BK. You know what BK stands for in the streets when you're a Crip? Blood killer. Isn't that so convenient that the guy who's most iconically identified with the Crips, enemies of the Bloods, is able to say and get paid a lot of money, BK? Well, listen to part two of that.
It's the business like me, Snoopy Digo Double G. One love from the LBC to the BK, baby.
To the BK, baby, to the blood killers. He gets to do a shout out to his blood and bloodettes, sisters and brothers. And look, I'm telling you, Burger King, which is located down in Miami, they have no idea. It's sort of like when Serena Williams was doing the milk commercial, you know, with the milk mustache with her sister. And she gave the Crip sign a C. And I recognized that right away. And naturally, she was in denial. But every time Serena wins, which is often, unlike her sister, who's a little long in the tooth now, she does a Crip dance. Oh, yeah, right there in the main center court. And everybody goes, oh, isn't that cute? Are you kidding? That's a tribute to the Crips. Don't they realize that young kids are watching them and they know the real deal, that these are shout-outs to degenerate killer gangbangers?
Curtis Lewa, The Drive at 5.
Curtis Lewa, legendary New Yorker.
77 WABC.
So the other day, I'm watching the boob tube, and I see Andrew Evil Eyes Cuomo, King Cuomo II, son of Mario Faccia Brutto, King Cuomo I, talk about how he wants a new hush-hush, mush-mush undercover program to root out discrimination in home rental and sales. And that's good. And then I say to myself, now, wait a second. Why don't you apply the same strategy to all the illegal conversions? All of these houses, two-family houses, is suddenly housing sometimes 24 or more families. You go into the basement, they're like 12 apartments where you shouldn't have even had anybody occupying a basement. You go upstairs, everyone has their own particular apartment in a room. It used to be a room of a two-family home. Yeah, I mean, it's systemic. And it's not just here in the city of New York. It's in Long Island. It's in Connecticut. It's in Pennsylvania. It's throughout New Jersey. You find the town, and I'll point out the illegal conversion. But where I found it worse to be is in Queens, which is a growing borough. Soon may well match the real estate prices that you now get in Brooklyn. But the illegal conversions are off the hook. And on the line to discuss that and what should be done is Paul Graziano, a Flushing resident and urban planner. Thanks for joining us on The Drive at 5 Home, Paul.
Glad to be here, Curtis.
All right. So, Paul, I go into a Flushing or I go across Flushing Meadow Park near City Field and I go into nearby Elmhurst and Corona. And I see apartment building after apartment building in which the moment I walk in, there are so many illegal conversions. Why is nothing being done to stop it? It is so obvious right in front of our face.
Well, this has been an epidemic that's been going on for decades. I mean, this is not something, especially in Queens. Perhaps it started heavily in Queens and has spread elsewhere as more and more people have been coming to the city and then out to New Jersey and Connecticut, Long Island, et cetera. But in Queens itself, I believe when the statistics were put together recently, there is by far the largest number of complaints for illegal conversions. And like you said, a lot of them are single-family homes, two-family homes, three-family homes that have been converted into 15, 20, 30-unit buildings. And this is an extremely dangerous thing. to happen, you know, in terms of building code, fire code. And it also ends up destroying these neighborhoods, many of which are quite nice places to live. But if you have a situation where you have an expectation to live in a single-family neighborhood and the house at the corner has 15 people in it and the buildings department refuses or can't or someone's been paid off to look the other way to deal with the problem, it actually creates more problems.
And I think it starts at the top and it drips down. City Hall doesn't want to deal with it. None of the
Correct.
Borough leaders want to deal with it. But you could stand outside that building you described that's now housing 15 people that used to be just a single-family occupied building. You see mounds of garbage when the sanitation department picks up the regular trash. In many instances, they're stealing electricity. You can see that. The wires are tapping right into the Con Ed pole. Con Ed doesn't say anything. You know, you got 52 dishes on the roof, you know, for 52 different TVs that are somewhere in that house. And you're saying the roof is going to collapse from all those dishes. Anybody with any kind of 20/20 vision could see their illegal conversions. So what happens when you complain? What is the process?
Well, you know, it's the same process with 311 since they created 311, which is you file for saying that there's an illegal conversion in a house. The problem is, like I said before, the buildings department does not prioritize illegal conversions. They may say that they do, but they don't. And now with the current administration, oftentimes they're not inspecting a call-in or a 311 complaint for 40 days.
Well, let me ask you this. An inspector, they go out there from the Department of Buildings. A lot of times it's an absentee landlord. They're not even around. They're down in Delray, you know, Florida, and they own multiple properties that are in disrepair. You think that these inspectors are getting the old scuttle sandwich where there's some dead president stuffed into a hero sandwich?
Well, there's no question that some of that's going on, but I would go even further, which is that the law says that if no one answers the door twice, it's resolved.
So wait, hold on a second.
An inspector comes up, does an inspection, knocks on the door, nobody answers. He goes back the next day, knocks on the door, nobody answers. They then say that the issue has been resolved.
Okay, so let me get this straight, Paul Graziano, a Flushing resident and urban planner.
Right.
A guy comes knocking on the door. The person inside says, gee, could it be La Migra? Could it be the Mormons trying to recruit me or the Jehovah Witnesses with their watchtower? Or could it be a Department of Building Inspector? What the hell? I'm not opening up the door for anybody.
That's right.
And as a result of that, the fact that two times they show up, nobody answers the door, they basically sweep it under the rug.
Correct.
That's crazy.
It's nuts. And this is policy. They tried to start talking about getting warrants so that the police and the buildings department could enter into buildings. But first they said that other people who would be complaining for these warrants, first they were going to have to not be anonymous. Now they're saying they can be anonymous. But really, I have to say, since the current mayor came in, this has not become a high priority. This mayor has been pushing to legalize basement apartments, which is one of the biggest problems and really a huge fire issue. We're talking about safety. We're talking about quality of life. And it's a real, real problem for the city of New York. And the fact that it's been going on for so long, and now we're really at a crisis point where in every neighborhood you're seeing this. And again, we're talking about neighborhoods, like you said, where houses are going for $2 million. And you're getting someone buying a house and in many cases converting it into illegal units.
Oh, there's no doubt, and I got to tell you, it's not just a problem for the five boroughs with your mayor out there, people, Comrade Bill de Blasio. He's not my mayor, but it's systemic throughout Jersey, Connecticut, Pennsylvania, and especially Nassau and Suffolk County, Long Island.
Curtis Lewa.
Between the Scylla and Charybdis of commentary.
The Drive at 577 WABC.
Get past the people, get past the hitmen.
Slim Shady Sharpton of the National Action Hate Network. Remember formerly when he would host at night on MSNBC Shakedown America? Well, he's at it again. First, there was the out-the-cock of Bernie Sanders that he had breakfast with at Sylvia's. He didn't pay for the check, neither did Bernie. Some unknown figure picked up the check. And earlier today, so nice, he's done it twice, back-to-back, belly-to-belly, by having breakfast with Her Majesty Hillary Rodham Clinton at an IHOP in downtown Manhattan. And after this sit-down, in which he was talking about helping to get out the black vote, he had this to say.
We are about collective information so we can put collective leverage on those that seek to be the first white successor to the first black president in this country. That's our task. We intend to live up to that task because all of us are going to have to answer to those members of our organizations. And that's what this morning was about. I think Secretary Clinton was very candid and open. And I think it's the beginning of a dialogue, hopefully, with all the candidates.
So if you're, let me get this straight out, Slim Shady Sharpton, breaking down your fiscal tricknology. If, in fact, there is a white successor, can there only be a white successor unless somebody comes out independently in the last minutes of this election and runs as a person of color? Some white guy or white gal out there is going to win. And I'm extrapolating from that that cash register is going to be singing and ringing. Because that white president, whether it's Bernie, the out-the-cocker Sanders, Donald Trump, Hillary Rodham Clinton, they're going to have to pay more for sewels. And they're going to have to make more gratuities and pay more bakshish to people like you who are trying to shake them down. He went on to say the following.
I'm going to lean toward whoever leans toward us the most.
Wait a second. Could I hear that again?
I'm going to lean toward whoever leans toward us the most.
Whoever leans towards us the most. Does that mean if the envelope is heavier from Hillary the Rodham Clinton, that means she's leaning more towards Al Slim Shady Sharpton's pockets than Bernie, the skin flint who throws nickels around like manhole covers coming out of Brighton Beach, Brooklyn, Sanders? And then he had this to say, and listen to this because this will tell you a lot about the shakedown king, Al Slim Shady Sharpton.
We're gonna harass you.
You gotta watch her. She's trying to ask whether I'm endorsing. I told only you know, and you're not telling.
My lips are sealed.
Oh, all giddy, all happy. My lips are sealed. Now let me explain to you what this is all about. Al Slim Shady Sharpton of the National Action Hate Network needs money. He feeds off of that. His personal expenses are off the roof. He leaves a five-star lifestyle in which everybody else pays. In fact, at one point when he was asked, seriously, do you own anything in your life? He said, no, not even the BVDs or the Fruit of the Loom that I wear. They were bought for me by Isn't It Great to Be in America, Don King, who, by the way, beat a manslaughter rap in East Cleveland years ago. Johnny Cochran at the time, who was alive, he hadn't passed away yet. He was a contributor to the fund to keep Al Slim Shady Sharpton in the finest threads, you know, looking GQ and having anything he wanted. And he said even the wedding ring that he had at that time had been purchased by his wife, who he has since divorced. He owned nothing, not even the belly button lint that he had accumulated at that point on his rounded stomach. Now, as you know, he's shrunken so much, he looks like a David Wright bobblehead New York Mets style. If he turns sideways, you only see his head. But really what he was saying is that, hey, we need street money. Because today he was the advocate for a lot of black reverends and black leaders of powerful civil rights organizations. And it's always been part of the political process in urban America that if you're going to try to get out a black vote, if you're an insurgent Republican, or if you happen to be in the majority with the Democrats who control most of the urban districts around America, that in order to get the black vote out, you've got to go to black reverends, you've got to give them cash. It's called street money. It's all accounted for, although they never show it on the books. Oh, no, they never, never show it on the books. You give the envelopes out, and the black minister goes into the bully pulpit on Sunday, right before Election Day on Tuesday, and tells everyone they need to vote for candidate A, who has been so helpful to our church. Except in the time, remember, Christine Todd Whitless, the Republican challenger of Florio, the governor at the time in 93, who actually paid the black reverends throughout New Jersey to suppress the vote. Go in your bully pulpit and don't mention anything about politics. Just speak about JC on Sunday. And guess who won? That's right, Christine Todd Whitless.